Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Blue moon, you saw me standing alone.
Welcome to the Man City Show, everyone. This is Tony Newgrosh keeping the chair warm once more for our Nigel. So after another infernal international break, all eyes turn to this weekend's mighty clash against the great chokers from Arsenal. Joining me tonight to discuss that game and all things blue, it's the very lovely Sarah Messenger.
Hello, Tony.
It's the fairly lovely Paul. Hi, Stato.
Hi there. Great to be called lovely.
And Klopp's biggest fan, we heard you last week, Spencer. It's Spencer Debson.
I'll never live that down. Hi, Tony.
You certainly won't. Okay, guys. Big game this weekend. Much to look forward to. Before we dive in, let's just perhaps take a view as to how March has been so far. It was identified a long time ago as a big month. Paul, two wins and a draw. Are you broadly satisfied with that? What's your overall reflection so far?
I'm satisfied because as we went into the month, I said that's what I'd take. A draw at Anfield would be a decent result, and a couple of wins in the other games. So yeah, I'd say we're performing reasonably well. It was a tough game at Anfield we discussed a couple of weeks back. So I'm pretty happy overall. We go into these final games of the season with all to play for, as they say. We've got a chance in all three major trophies yet again. And even if we ended up with zero, we're still there. That's what counts at this stage. So let's fingers crossed and onwards and upwards. And last game in March coming up, we'll talk about it in a few minutes. And then the April fixtures. So great to be in this position.
Yeah. Are you reserving judgment likewise, Sarah, till the Arsenal game?
I think Paul's right that we'd have taken this position, you know, with a week to go in March, still in the three trophies, only a point behind in the league, got a point at Anfield, all the things that we would have ideally ticked off our list. Yes, a win at Anfield would have been lovely, but let's be honest, we would have been in dreamland if that had happened. Next week is a massive game, and it will tell us, I think, quite a lot about City's chances of winning the title. I do think we've got to win that game to be more confident of winning the title, because Liverpool last year with Arsenal was always that sense that they'd not been there before and they might drop off. But we know Liverpool have been there before, and we now know Arsenal have got the benefit of what they learnt last season. So they're more formidable, I think, than any title challenge we've had for quite a while.
Okay. Spencer, since we last spoke, we've seen Mic'd Up, where Howard Webb comes on board and tells us all about a few contentious decisions. And I thought I'd get the Liverpool view from you, Spencer, if I could. There was much debate about the penalty that wasn't, shall we say. Now, I'll nail my flag to the post here, as it were. They didn't give the penalty for that high boot from Doku. For once, DAR worked perfectly, didn't it? High bar. Referee made a decision. He saw it. VAR said, wasn't a clear howler, not getting involved. What's your blue or red view, depending on which side of the bed you got out of this morning?
It's funny you mentioned that particular incident, because There is a little sort of Sky Sports thing on all of that where they had Howard Webb on going through it all. And actually, it's actually quite interesting because, of course, if you're a Blue, it should have not been and should have been and vice versa. But they actually went through the whole process and basically saying, had the referee given, it probably wouldn't have been overturned. Had the referee not given, which was the case, it wouldn't be overturned. And they went through the reasons why. And they went through the whole thing and, you know, slow-mo and all the rest of it. So it does actually show we always have a go, don't we, when things don't go in our favour. But sometimes these things are really rather difficult and marginal to judge. And I think he explained quite well why, because the referee hadn't given it, it would have been actually wrong for it to be overturned by VAR. So on that particular one, I think it was kind of okay. But in another moment, I suppose, it's quite interesting, isn't it, that at Anfield, you know, in that moment, it's not given. Given the significance of the game and everything. But I did understand, having gone through all of that routine, that actually probably the refereeing quality was okay on that particular one. A long-winded answer to a short question, but that's how it seems.
You'd always have 50% of the fans moaning whichever way they're giving it. I think that's all we can say. Paul, I think that's, as I say, I think we've done that to death now. I want to talk about the penalty rule, though. Is it the most stupid rule in football? Why should that one decision have decided the whole game? If he fouled him, it wasn't a goal-scoring opportunity. Why is it a penalty? It really annoys me. Should it not just be a free kick and penalties for denial of a goal-scoring opportunity wherever it is, just like they have the penalty try in rugby? Would that not make the whole game fairer? Discuss.
That's an interesting take on it, Tony. I've not thought about this before. If it's a foul on anywhere else on the pitch, why would he then give a free kick for a foul on the pitch? You should just... the argument would be, if you're tripped in the area, you don't know what might develop coming after it. So therefore, that's why penalties are given, because if the guy gets round you in a position to pull the ball back or whatever, or have a shot, and he's tripped, then it's a penalty. The handball ones are a bit more dubious because sometimes it bounces up and hits a striker and it's not allowed as a goal if they do score. Whereas if it is a defender after bouncing up off his knee, it's not a penalty. So there's inconsistencies in the law in that how free kicks and penalties are given. I do think if it's a foul in the area, then tripping or whatever it might be, kicking, standing on a foot, then it should be a penalty.
Rubbish. Sarah, help me out here. Come on. I mean, go on.
I'd like to help you out, Tony, but I'm actually going to disagree with you and agree with Paul, because you know what will happen if we did change? I mean, I understand the logic of what you said, but you know what will happen? We'll just spend all of our podcasts arguing about what is or isn't a goal-scoring opportunity. And I can think of quite a few goals that have been scored over the years where it came out of the blue. None of us expected somebody to put it in the net, but they did. So technically that was a goal-scoring opportunity. But if somebody had put their foot up like Doku did, we'd have said, well, they were never going to score from there, so that's not a goal-scoring opportunity. So I just think the easiest thing to do is say, if it's a foul and it's within those white lines, it's a penalty. Just one other quick point. I know we've done it to death, but I just want to make one other point, which is that VAR is there to overturn an obvious error. For me, the thing about Doku is that he just barely brushed McAllister's fingernail. He may have put his foot up, but he barely made contact with him. And so I'm glad that they didn't win the game on the basis of something like that being awarded as a penalty.
You're right, Sarah. It should have been a free kick, but all right. I'll take you all on another topic. Let's move on then. A couple of other developments this week. Very quickly, we talked about the cup final draw last week, Chelsea. I'm sure we're all quietly confident of that. But we've now been told it'll be 5:30 on a Saturday evening with no trains back to Manchester afterwards, if you allow for the fact there might be extra time and penalties. Paul, absolute disgrace.
It's the same every season, isn't it? We've been in, is this our sixth FA Cup semi-final run or fifth? I lose track of it, so many. But it's ridiculous. Every season we have the same discussion. And every season the FA television companies ignore the fact that fans cannot get back to Manchester after a 5:30 kickoff on a Saturday or a Sunday evening. So we're knocking our heads against a brick wall because TV and the FA rule. but it's wrong.
It is wrong. Spencer, this is the richest league in the world. Now, City, bless them, did lay on some charter trains for the European Cup games a few seasons ago, so fans coming from London could get to and from the game. I think it was about £50. They had the League Cup on board. They had a few of the old players. It was superb. Right. So why can't the FA and or City simply do it, or even Avanti? This is easy money for them. Why cannot we run a train at 8 o'clock at night? I just don't understand. Help me out.
No, we're all speaking as one, you know, being somewhat of the London contingent on here. We should just sort it out ourselves, shouldn't we? I mean, they were absolutely excellent occasions, those City in the City trips. Going back to why, you know, are we scheduled on a Friday night, a Saturday night, Sunday afternoon? It comes back, it's a derivative of success in broadcasting. And on the one hand, I suppose, we can't whinge too much that all the broadcasting revenues, you know, reflect to some extent what the broadcasters want to do. They know that there's going to be a full house anyway, and it's highly inconvenient for a lot of fans. But I'm afraid I think money talks, and we have to just sort of work around it. But no, it's not fun for us, and we have to do sleep overnight when we don't want to, et cetera, et cetera. Let's reactivate City in the City. I'll spend a bit of time on that with you if you want to.
Well, maybe, Sarah. I think we are perhaps too nice as fans. We've still yet to have any sensible feedback on the debacle that was Istanbul, where we're lucky nobody lost a life. And we're all just sat here shrugging our shoulders on this. Well, I mean, the fans may well vote with their feet again like they did last season in the semi-final. Any thoughts, Sarah?
Well, I think the fans, actually, we did make quite a fuss about our experience in Istanbul. But you're right that nothing as yet tangible has come of it. But the guys have summed up the reasons why we get these kickoffs at 5:30 on a weekend night. And I think it is that money talks, as Spencer said. I also think it's that passion talks. The reality is they know that fans that love the club, and that's all of us and many other the thousands that go regularly to watch City will make it work somehow. So they just outsource the problem onto us. We're the ones who have to figure out how we're going to get ourselves back up the motorway, or where we can stay for the night in London if we're not going to be able to get back up north. And while we all keep on doing that, they carry on putting the kickoff at 5:30. So. And in a way, you kind of would want the only thing that might make a real difference is if fans from both teams that get to the semi-final, even if one group of fans weren't inconvenienced by it, because, for example, they're London-based, if everyone said, we're not putting up with this anymore, and we all boycotted the match, then they'd notice, because they do not want to broadcast a match with no fans in the ground.
Well, indeed. But listen, I hear you, and I've got a lot of sympathy with what you say about, you know, the TV companies hold the rights with the FA, but they could just put on a late train for us. But what would we know as humble fans? Okay, another thing. Let's move on then very quickly. International friendlies this weekend. Absolute waste of time, quite frankly, in my opinion. Why not either give the players a break or end the season a week early and have the friendlies before the Euros as more of a more meaningful match? Paul, any performances or comments to pick out from the week?
Well, I totally agree with what you just said, Tony. They should end the season a week or two earlier and have the friendlies after the end of the season. Then there's no danger of injuries, i.e. Walker. We don't know how long he might be out for, if at all, but it looks like a hamstring injury, which means at least a couple of weeks. And we need him for the games against Arsenal and against Real Madrid, definitely. So really hate international breaks. I understand, if they're there, why Southgate and all the other managers will pick their strongest teams, because that's what they want to do. But it's not great. Don't like them, never have done, and I pay a little bit of attention to them just to see how the City players perform, and hopefully that they don't get injured. So I was really a bit upset when Walker went off after, what, about 20 minutes after Maguire, I think, screwed up and then nearly scored. So there we go. Very upsetting.
All right. Well, look, good to see Rico Lewis has been called up to the full squad. So I guess that's one positive from that. But assuming Spencer and Sarah largely agree with those views. Let's move on, if we may. Sarah, there was some football this weekend, and City's ladies teams stuffed the rags 3-1. Did you watch it?
I did watch it. It was a fantastic result. We could have done with not letting the goal in at the end, because that meant our goal difference would have been one ahead of Chelsea, even though they subsequently would have wiped it out by it through their win at West Ham. But what I would say about City women is that they had a very unsettled period when they lost four or five key players, you know, the Kira Walshes, the Georgia Stanways, and so on. And so last season was very transitional, and there was a lot of people calling for Gareth Taylor to go. But he's put together a really good team, and they may not win the league this season, but I'd be pretty confident, particularly with Emma Hayes moving on from Chelsea, that they should be definitely in with a very good chance of winning it next season. And you never know. Let's hope we do win it this season. I think it's all going to come down to goal difference, because, you know, one of the challenges that the women's game has got is to get the league more competitive and stop it just being three or four teams that are capable of beating each other, and the rest become almost cannon fodder for those top three or four. So I do think City and Chelsea will win all their remaining games. It's going to be a question of who scores the most goals, I think. But yeah, great performers. Who doesn't enjoy beating that lot?
Good, and good luck to the ladies for the rest of the season. I think it's five games to go, as you say, neck and neck. Come on, City, you can do it.
Tony, before we move on,
please
on,
do.
On the ladies, I just looked this up, about 40,000 attendance. I mean, this is what's the momentum with women's football. It's just fantastic. And to think we get 40,000 for that game is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, it's quite astonishing, really. I think if you'd said that 10 years ago, you'd have thought, no chance. So, you know, they've worked hard for it.
Live on the telly. I mean, you know, women's football live on the telly. I could never have dreamed of such a thing, even 10, 15 years ago. So it's fantastic.
Yeah, and it's attracting a whole new audience to the game, isn't it? And that may well spill over between the men's and the women's game. And it's a lovely atmosphere there, isn't it? I don't think it's quite as tribal as the men's game. So, listen, we wish the women all the best, and hopefully that can only add to our trophy haul at the Etihad. All right, before we turn to the Arsenal game, just one other thing I think we should talk about, which is PSR or financial fair play. We've now seen Everton docked 6 points after appeal, reduced from 10. Forest have been fined 4 points. We've now got further hearings going on for Everton. And of course, the elephant in the room is the 115 charges against Manchester City. Paul, what do you take from all of this? Should we be more or less worried after this?
I really don't know, to be quite honest. City seem to believe they've got a good defence against the charges. The Premier League believe they've got a good case to take all these charges against us. I don't know where the points deduction calculation comes from, why Forest get 4 and Everton 6 or 6, whichever way around it goes, and why it goes from 10 down to reduction. I don't know if there's a methodology or a way that they do this calculation. If we're found guilty of X number of those charges, it depends on the severity of those charges that we're found guilty of as to what the punishment will be. Will it happen this season? It looks highly unlikely to happen this season. But if we're then going to be punished next season, we should know. I don't think any club should be punished beyond December of a year. They've got to have a chance to recover some of their point deduction. So if, as Everton and Forest, I think it's really ridiculous that they get charged and punished at this stage of the season, whereas they're running into the final rounds of matches. So if City are to get punished, I hope we do not get punished. But if we are to face anything, I hope it comes clean very early in the next season so that we know exactly where we stand.
It's getting a bit of a nonsense, isn't it, Spencer? Because we now have the situation where these appeals can go on beyond the end of the season. And it's just going to be an absolute disaster, isn't it? If on the last day of the season, as much as Sky love to hype it up, you simply do not know who's won the league, who's in Europe, who's up or down from any of these divisions. We should mention Leicester have also been charged this week. To go, Spencer?
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, that the concept is really in disrepute, isn't it? The whole idea that you have to sort of balance the books in some semi-artificial way that sort of protects the companies the clubs that have already sort of got a head start on building their squads, and the execution of it. I mean, having points applied and then reduced. I mean, it's an absolute nonsense the way that this is being administered. So on both grounds, there's a lot to answer for. As for City, I mean, all I can say is I know we've got some very clever and expensive KCs on it. They're probably the best in the country, David Panic. And I cannot imagine they would be other than very, very tactical about the way this comes out. But the supposedly, whatever sanctions there may or may not be, definitely won't track through until supposedly next summer, not this summer. So I don't know. I don't know. It's all Chinese whispers a little bit. But the whole concept, I think, brings football as a sport down. It's got a lot to answer for.
I just find this all very difficult, Sarah. I mean, City have, I think, been very responsible with their transfer dealings. I think they've been an absolute credit to football. Pep alone has changed the way the world plays football. We've given immense joy, not just to City fans, but I think football fans everywhere. We've put money into football, unlike the Glazers. And yet here we are, people talking about possible expulsions, what a disgrace we are, et cetera, et cetera. I can't square it, can you?
I feel just like you, Tony. It drives me insane. And you know, I know we can all sit here and we can all say, well, the rules are the rules, and if you've broken the rules, then you know you and I can't argue against that. You know, City sign up to the rules. I'm not convinced that they have done anything wrong, but if they have, then we all have to take. But the rule is the fact that the rules themselves, we've said it many times on this podcast about the motivations behind FFP. If it's supposed to save football clubs, will somebody let Rochdale know why? How come they're about to go, you know, to the wall? We know about Bury. There's many others. It's not doing what it's supposed to do. I passionately believe it was all about protecting the elite, and nobody as yet has persuaded me otherwise. But I resent as well this kind of. I know fans will always bait each other and goad each other, and that's part of being a football fan. But I resent the kind of question mark over City's achievements. You know, I don't mind somebody questioning us because we haven't played very well, or we didn't deserve something, or we've bought a dodgy player in the transfer market. But I resent it, and that's probably me just being emotional and selfish. But I do. I think it's very unfair, and I hope. I'd really hope passionately that City are exonerated one day, so we can look people in the eye and say everything we won and achieved, we did it on merit and we did it within the rules. Just one other quick point. I read somewhere this week that I think it's Etihad Airways are planning to float on the stock exchange. Now, I'm not an expert in numbers, I'm sure. And that means they have to open up their books to, you know, literally anyone in the world who wants to read them. And therefore, there's this sense that if they are doing that, they must be pretty confident that they're not going to be exposing themselves to somebody spotting that they were slipping all this dodgy money to City when we allegedly were doing that. So whether that's a good thing, we'll find out in due course, I guess.
Listen, as a humble accountant, I would readily admit that there's so much subjectivity in a set of accounts that if they want to find us guilty of something, and let's be clear, there's 115 charges here, they will find us guilty of something. And that is the worry, isn't it? But where does this end? Are they going to suddenly say, take away Aguero's winning goal from 2012 and, you know, Sky Sports can never show that clip because it no longer won the league? They're talking about interfering with some of the most iconic moments in football here. And they need to be very careful what they wish for. That said, do we want a Harlem Globetrotters-style team? You know, PSG have tried it and it didn't work for them. So it's very, very hard. But I think the one thing we would all say, it needs to be resolved and resolved quickly, I think, doesn't it?
Definitely.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll be resolved quickly, but it should be, because we really want to stop having these conversations, basically, don't we?
Yeah. Just one final point on that. I mean, we talk of, you know, all the scousers and getting on the high horse about City should be thrown out and they've cheated. Do you know what? We watch football every week and see blatant cheating before our eyes, don't we? People appealing for throw-ins that they know isn't theirs. People throwing themselves to the ground when they haven't been touched. People feigning injuries and getting the physios to come on to take up time wasting. And we kind of all applaud that, don't we? We think, good on you guys, pushing the rules. And yet, when it comes to the finances, which has nothing to do with putting the ball in the back of the net, there's all this holier-than-thou attitude. And I think it stinks, to be honest. So All right, enough said. I'm feeling a lot better for having got all of this out. Let's take a break, guys, and then when we come back, we'll talk about the important things, the football and the big game this weekend. See you all in a minute. Okay, welcome back. So let's get back to some real action this weekend. It's the big one. It's Arsenal. I was lucky enough to be at both Arsenal games last year, and what two great games of football, I have to say. Paul, is this going to be another cracker?
It should be. I was at both games last season, the 4-1 and the 3-1, and it was absolutely brilliant. We were fantastic in both games, perhaps a little bit fortuitous at the Emirates, but I mean, we were the better team in the second half, no doubt about it, probably even the first. But we absolutely murdered them in the Etihad game. So am I looking forward to it? It's going to be a very, very challenging, tense affair. I think Arsenal are marginally better than they were last season. I think Rice has added something to their team. Saka clearly had an inverted commas injury that kept him out of the England squad this week, so he'll be raring to go. We've got to win this game. It's as simple as that. We've got a brilliant home record. We've not lost for a long, long time, and we need to keep that going, but we need to make sure we're on the winning side on Sunday. I just think this is one of those games that we've got to win to show who's boss. And if we win, we do two things. One, it gives us confidence. Secondly, it dents Arsenal's confidence. And Liverpool, even if they win at the weekend, they'll say, oh, shit, City are still there. They're still fighting. And it might just knock them a bit. So, to me, it's a must-win game.
Spencer, we've been here before. In fact, we've been here 1,000 times with City, haven't we? And we always seem to do it, to be fair, don't we? So, you confident?
Well, look, Paul summed that up very, very well. And I remember this time last year before we played Arsenal, and we were a little bit nervous about it, and then 10-15 minutes in, we absolutely spanked them, so we've got that reference point. We hope for that again, but I must say we all know that Arsenal are, they've got two things this year, haven't they? They've obviously got they've got the signings, Rice is really looking really a very good player. They've got all the others, Saka and all the rest, and they've got confidence, and they've got they've got the goals going. Odegaard's looking fantastic. So I'd love to think that we're going to steamroll them, but I don't think anyone's actually going to do that with Arsenal this year, and it's going to be a very, very tight game. So I do feel nervous about it. It's a must-win game, absolutely. And I mean, if any team can win at the Etihad when it really matters, it's our Blues. So bring it on, and let's get to Sunday.
Well, Sarah, Arsenal have outspent us in the past 5 years by some considerable margin. I mean, surely we should be going into this as second favourite, shouldn't we?
Of course, underdogs, yeah. I mean, the guys have summed up Sunday very well, I think. So nothing really to add to all of that other than, we're all... I guess the games like this sum up why we both love and hate being football fans, because the joy of winning will be delicious, but the fear and trepidation beforehand, and then going, for example, if we go 1-0 down, we can go back to the joy of the Manchester derby. I mean, the very thought of losing to them was making me feel sick beforehand. And when Rashford slams in a worldie, having had the worst season in living memory, you just think, oh, my God. But, but then you have to go through that in order to enjoy what you enjoy at the end. So, we've got to win. And if we do, I will be reasonably optimistic about us winning the title.
Okay, reasonably optimistic. I'll take that. Okay, let's have a think about the team. Paul, I think for the first time in a very, very long time, people have been questioning whether Edison is really our number one. He's been injured. I've not heard anything more. I'm quietly confident, don't ask me why, that he will be fit, but still our number one for you?
Ooh, that's a very good question. When it comes to distribution, he's better than Ortega. Ortega sometimes a little bit slower. I think Ortega is a marginally better shot stopper, though. So it depends who you're playing and what pressure you expect. I'm not in the slightest bit worried if Ortega's in goal. Let me put it that way. I think he's a fantastic number two to have at the club. And we're very lucky to have two such good goalkeepers. I think Arsenal can probably boast similar as well. But yeah, if Ortega plays, I'm not worried.
Okay. And Spencer, I think the one big downside of the international break is Kyle Walker's injury. We don't know how serious, but as a hamstring, I'd be surprised if he plays. How much of a blow is that?
You know, it's a blow, isn't it? But we've got the wherewithal. The one player that we really fear losing for any game is Rodri. I mean, yes, Walker's a loss, but I think we've got plenty of sort of plan Bs, really, be it Akanji, be it Stones, be it Rico Lewis. So it is what it is, really. And so I think we can work around that, to be honest. As for the keeper, I definitely bring Edison back if we can, just for, you know, the consistency and continuity of the team. So I'm not too worried about team selection for Saturday. We've just got to really, really gel as a unit and show them what we can do.
Sarah, seems to me pretty much sort of four from six as far as the back four goes these days. Subject to Kyle Walker being fit, we've got three centre-halves we could rotate, and Bardiol or Ake at left-back, it seems. What back four would you go for?
Well, it'd be interesting to see whether Diaz plays, won't it, on the basis that there was a sense against United that he might be vulnerable on the counter-attack. Now, Arsenal aren't likely to play on the counter-attack. You know, it's going to be a tit-for-tat kind of game, but, of course, they have got a lot of pace. So I guess that's an interesting question around Diaz. But, you know, on the other hand, when he plays well, he's a very, very formidable defender and he organises that defence. And if Walker's not there, that might be even more of a reason to play Diaz. I guess there's then a question about whether he has Stones in his midfield role or whether he wants him playing as a centre-back. But I would probably play Ake on the left, as left-back. I mean, I like Guardiola. I think he's going to be a great player for us. But I think for a game like this, at this stage, I'd play Ake. Kanji's got a reasonable amount of pace. So potentially you put Akanji. I mean, Akanji could go right back, couldn't he? And then you put Diaz and Stones in the middle.
Okay. But,
I mean, who knows? You know, Pep might play two defenders for all we know, might he?
Well, I was going to say, for all of Pep's unpredictability, if we look at the front six, I'm going to be slightly controversial here. I think we've got five absolute nailed-ons these days, and there's only one place to talk about. You've got Rodri. Anyone going to argue that Rodri shouldn't play? Didn't
Definitely
think so.
Not.
Oh, yeah, okay. Phil Foden has to play. KDB has to play. You're going to have Bernardo, aren't you? And you've got to have Erling up front. Anyone disagree with me that those are five nailed-on starters?
Spot on, Tony.
Okay, all right then. So who gets the extra berth? Paul, start with you.
Well, Kovacic had a very good game when he came on against Liverpool for the last 15 minutes and turned it around a little bit for us. Depends whether you want to go more attack-minded, which case you play either Doku or if Grealish is fit, potentially play Grealish. Grealish hasn't had a brilliant last few matches when he's been fit, but he holds the ball up well. Doku is a bit more of a risk because he'll take players on and lose the ball sometimes, and we're subject to the fast break that Arsenal can lay on us. I would be tempted, of all those players, if Grealish is fit, maybe to play Grealish as the sixth of those players.
Spencer?
Do you know what? I've been going through the same thing. I've written exactly this down. I actually would also go Grealish over Doku. And I think Grealish has got a bit to prove, hasn't he, now? He's sort of fallen out a little bit, been injured. I think he really has got, you know, needs to give a good performance. And he's that sort of player who can do that for us. So, yeah, I think for his ball-holding abilities, and we do not want to be losing the ball gratuitously against this Arsenal team. So I would agree with that. I'd agree with Grealish.
Sarah, the one player the boys haven't mentioned is Alvarez, who I think is a great player, but in the big games, in the tight games, I think we lose a bit of control. Do you think he should play, or Doku, or Grealish, or Nunes? Go on, take your pick.
Well, I agree with Spencer and Paul about Grealish, certainly over Doku for this game. But I think it's, you know, we can talk about the starting lineup for the rest of this podcast, but the reality is, even though Pep is not renowned for multiple substitutions on regular occasions, you know, there's a lot of this is going to, you know, if he wants control of the game, let's say we're 1-0 up, there's 15 minutes to go, he'll bring on Kovacic and take off one of them. If we're 2-0 down or 1-0 down with 20 minutes to go, he may well take off Grealish and put Doku on just to see if he can trigger something, et cetera, et cetera. So, and again, he may bring Alvarez on. I don't think Alvarez has been quite as good this season as he was last season, but he's still a great player and he's a young player. So it's not intended as a criticism. I think it's just, you know, that's what happens with younger players. And I wouldn't be worried if Alvarez was playing, but I think I would look at Doku, Alvarez, Nunes, Kovacic, you know, the Rico Lewises and probably one or two others as being, you know, part of that squad mentality. And they won't start, but they've got a role to play depending on how the game is going.
All right. Well, we shall see. Paul, last year, we had quite surprising tactics from City, didn't we? We were playing the long ball up to Erling, if you recall KDB's first goal. Do you expect to see anything similar this time?
I do recall. And we've played it a couple of times this season as well, where we've just hoofed it up, which is unlike City, but it's to catch the opponents out because they're never sure which way we're going to do it. I do like it when they vary it so that sometimes we'll draw two or three of their attackers in towards our goalkeeper, whether it's Ortega or Edison, and they'll launch it long in the hope that either Haaland can knock it on or control the ball and lay it off. So I love that alternate tactic. So we shouldn't just be about playing the ball short and playing it out from the back every single time. Let's vary it. So I enjoy it when we do it occasionally.
Spencer, let's just turn it on its head. What can we expect from Arsenal? Do you think they might come and play for a draw and just be very negative?
Definitely not. I don't think so. Not this time, no. I think they'll be richer for that experience of last year. And I think they'll be, you know, Arteta's no mug. And I think they've got the ball playing abilities this year. I've been really impressed with them. I mean, we always wondered, well, where are they going to get the goals from? They haven't got an out and out number nine, but they've been banging the goals in like there's no tomorrow. And really good goals, well constructed. Saka, what a player! I mean, really very such guile and skill. They've got skills all over the pitch. Odegaard, especially, you know, that Declan Rice there. They've got on their day, they've got their ability to create chances and score, I think, against any team, actually. So I think it a little bit depends on just how well they play on the day. It's going to be tight. We have to play really, really well to win the game, more than capable of it. But nothing's going to be easy about the game on Sunday, I'm sure about that.
They do look the real deal, don't they, Sarah, all of a sudden?
Yeah, I mean, they've had some great results, haven't they? And they're scoring goals, which, of course, was always seen as their potential Achilles heel, that lack of a kind of convincing out-and-out goal scorer. Yeah, I mean, if they play really, really well, City are going to have to play really, really well to either even get a draw, never mind beat them. You'd say that over the last few months, they've probably played marginally better than City, even though we've been pretty good since Christmas, although, you know, to be frank, they've played some games where teams have just literally sat down in the middle of the centre circle and said, help yourselves, lads. You know, I mean, they've not really had a real test. And when they have been tested, they've, you know, I can't remember which game it was recently where they got a kind of, Trossard got an 87th minute winner to make it 2-1. You know, it wasn't one of the top teams. So they're not invincible, Arsenal. I think we need to not get too carried away with them, but they are a very, very good team. The only other point I was going to make is that one of the things that will be in Arteta and the team, their calculations, is that they're not just worried about City this season. So even though normally a draw at the Etihad would probably be a good result for them, they've got Liverpool to worry about as well. So, in effect, they may be stopping us from going ahead of them on points, but they're also dropping points that allows Liverpool to build up a bit more of a cushion. And it's that tight that I just wonder how much that will affect the mentality. Whereas I sort of feel with Pep, he's been there a million times. We're the reigning champions. We've won it three in a row. His mentality, and we're at home, so his mentality will just be to win the game. But we'll see, I guess.
We will. All very exciting. Paul, I still don't think we've quite hit our absolute best yet, though, have we?
No, I don't think we have. We hit it in patches in some games. We can do it for 45 minutes in some matches or spells of 20, 30 minutes. But we've never really hit the heights for a full match this season. I can't think of one. Take the win against Trafford a couple of weeks back. First half, we weren't that great. Second half, we steamrolled them. I think we've got to be a bit more on the ball on Sunday because Arsenal will be a tough test. We can't afford to have a bad half, because if we have a bad half, we could find ourselves giving two goals away. And to score three against Arsenal, we'll need some doing. So, yeah, we've got to be ready for them as the best we can and show that we are the better team.
Fair enough. Before we have predictions, I'm going to let you think about this, and I'm going to write them down this time because I'm going to mark your homework very, very carefully. So I thought we'd just mention one other thing, which is David Bernstein's got a new book out. I was really there.
I've read it.
Good.
Yes. Good read. Is it a good read?
It's a good read. It brings back memories from when it all happened, when he became chair, from before he became chair till he departed after the Robbie Fowler issue, and he puts it all in writing. It's an interesting read. I wouldn't say it's the best book I've ever read, but it's good to read.
I'm halfway through, so don't ruin the ending for me.
Sorry. Okay.
But I think, listen, we should say, you know what? Whatever happens on Sunday, we've got an FA Cup semi-final to look forward to. Notwithstanding, we might not be able to get home. We've got Real Madrid in a Champions League quarterfinal. We're holding five trophies, and there we are, David Bernstein talking about when we were losing at Wickham. I was there, and it wasn't the fact we lost, it was the fact we lost and Joe Rawls said we were unlucky that really annoyed me. It's Wickham. So do you know what? Let's just enjoy it and just remember, whatever financial fair play means, we've had a fantastic run and we've been an absolute credit to football. That's what I think is the tragedy of all of this. Enough of that. Paul, let's have your prediction for City's inevitable victory this weekend. Go on, Paul.
2-1.
Tight one from Paul.
Tense.
Spencer?
2-1.
2-1. Sarah, don't you dare.
I think it's going to be tight, but I think that I think Arsenal might well score two goals, so I'm going 3-2.
Well, funnily enough, in the car home tonight, I was thinking we never bother with clean sheets anymore. And that's very sort of 2023. I was going to go for 4-2, a goal fest. So... winner buys a pint? I think so. All right. Well, on that note, it's been an absolute pleasure. Paul, Spencer, Sarah, thank you very much. Thank you all for listening. Enjoy the game and we'll see you again very, very soon. See you now. Bye-bye.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.